This is CliffCentral.com.
That is Annie Lennox and White a Shade of Pale, the original Procol Harum song. I love that version. I thought it was just maybe nice for a Thursday morning. Pumi says it was depressing.
In the rain.
That's what I felt like. It was a rainy kind of song. No? Did I screw up?
Listen here, Gareth. People must get up and go to work. People must get up and hustle. This is that Saturday morning, Sunday morning kind of rainy song that just keeps you like trapped in your blanket.
Yeah. That's the reason. That's what I was going for.
Thursday, Baba.
You don't win all of them. It's like Ben complains about my music every day as well. All right. Former Eskom chief executive Brian Molefe has failed in his final bid to appeal a high court order that he pay back the 11 million rand to Eskom that he owes them. Remember, that's part of a 30 million rand pension agreement that he was paid when he left Eskom. Took that money and ran. And then cried on TV.
I thought about last week's guest when I was reading this last night, and how I remember when she was saying that just because the law is available to you doesn't mean you have to take that route. And that's what I thought about. I just thought
Advocate Michelle LaRue, whose book is Lawfare. That's right. LAWFARE.
That's what I thought. I thought poor Brian, you know?
You thought poor Brian?
I did. I think poor Brian because he's so every wrong move. Remember that last year when this whole thing started, when they said to him, it was less than a year, right? Mm-hmm. That he'd taken this money and he hadn't taken all the money and he knew he did something wrong. Now he'd been caught out. He should have done what every 5 year old knows to do. You're just like, I'm sorry, mom.
Sorry, mom.
I'm sorry. He should have been like, right. I'm sorry, guys. You know what? Of the 11 million that I was given, here's the 8 that's left. I've spent the other 3, whatever, you know, just given the money back. And he would not be in this situation if he just like gone, I'm sorry, guys, I have spent some of this money. Here's the rest of your money back. And if you want me to pay off, I will pay it off over the next in installments of 2000 rand for the next 100 years, whatever. You know, people just, South Africans just don't want to be taken for a ride. We just want people to just bloody well take responsibility, you know, for what they've done wrong.
Yeah, exactly. That's what we want. Like, just someone to take responsibility. And also, like we discussed with Michelle LaRue last week, and if you didn't hear that, it's worth taking a listen to the podcast. What was interesting about it, too, is how many people use the courts as a means to
escape
their own responsibilities, right? I mean, it sounds ridiculous, but that's what a lot of people in government particularly, because they use state funds to pay for their legal fees, which are exorbitant. Legal fees are very expensive. Ordinary people can't afford to pay those things.
Because now Brian, first they said, no, you cannot appeal this thing. Just pay the money back.
Right.
Then he tried to go to a higher court, who then said, no, and gave him a cost order. So you remember, Michelle was saying, so he had to pay back the cost of the suit as well.
Right, exactly.
And now,
your personal account now. And thanks to that.
But now he actually has, they're punishing him. So now they've given him an extra punishment of fees. And if he were to at this moment say, I don't have the money, nobody will bloody believe him.
No, of course not. Listen,
because you've gone to the lawyers,
but if you've burned 30 million.
Now people want to see him go to jail.
Exactly.
And when he was crying, Lape, on TV, we were all still kind of like, oh, shame, this poor guy, it's all falling apart in a spectacular manner for him. Right?
Mm-hmm.
He had a little bit of, now nobody has any leeway for him. Nobody has any sympathy for him. Now we just want to see him in orange overalls, a la bricks.
Right, exactly. Orange is the new is the new Molefe. All right, so apparently there's quite a lot of talk going on. You know that King Dalindyebo, that derelict king who was pretty much put in jail for some outrageous crimes, including kidnapping and all kinds of other things. And now a lot of people are saying, well, all of that was political. I mean, there were actual people harmed in this. Can't be political then, but people are saying that they should pardon him. King Dalindyebo has correctly caused a stir with the elections around the corner. Some say it is reasonable to come to the conclusion that the pardon is an electioneering move.
Of course.
So, of course, this would go down very well with some traditional people in the Eastern Cape that have reverence for the institution of traditional leadership. Any serious politician, says Fikile Ntsikelelo Moya, who's a writer, he says, any serious politician who chooses to ignore this fact and assumes that the urban or social media platforms are all there is, does so to their own detriment. So despite the king being convicted of a crime, and he's shown no remorse for his crimes, crimes he committed against his own subjects, he still has something to say about who gets the vote in his constituency.
Oh, yeah.
So this is a way for, if Cyril pardons the king, for Cyril to guarantee a whole lot of votes to go for him.
Those kind of power dynamics, which is one of the things that we don't pay enough attention to,
right.
I think. The power dynamics of people and people who hold sway in communities. You know, I don't know if in your family...
Look at the religious leaders, and we'll speak to Archbishop Thabo Makgoba just now about how much influence religious leaders have, and that's why all the political parties are also visiting churches at the moment.
Oh, absolutely. And you've got to go to all of them. You've got to go, and that was the stroke of genius of Mr. Jimmy Manye with joining a faith-based organization.
Is that what they've done?
Yeah, that's ATM? What ATM is. It's like a huge conglomeration of churches. That have you not seen him even on his Twitter handle?
One of the most dishonest people with some of the people who purport to be honest.
He's always quoting Bible verses
because
that's what it is. But looking at by-elections, at some of the by-elections,
yeah?
I am astounded at the number of seats that they are winning. There were by-elections in KZN. He's not looking at us. Are we online? By-elections in KZN, by-elections in the Eastern Cape, some by-elections in the Eastern Cape. ATM picked up two seats. I saw that they picked up two seats.
That's phenomenal.
In one of the districts in KZN. And guess who lost?
Who lost?
The DA.
Wow.
So I'm telling you, faith-based organizations and those kinds of, and when we speak to the Archbishop now, we'll, you know, find out what his view and take on it is, hold a huge political sway. Political sway. And it's something that's well documented in this country, how much of a role the church and clergymen played in our political struggle across the faiths, you know.
Oh, absolutely.
It's not just Archbishop Desmond Tutu.
But also, I mean, I've always had a problem with politics and religion Emeritus. Mixing. I've always thought that, like Thomas Jefferson, there should be a wall between politics and religion, and that the two actually are not good bed companions. It to me is very dangerous to mix the two together, because there are a lot of credulous people on either side who will accept truths that might not be acceptable in the outside real world, in churches.
Gareth.
And I feel like if a politician got up in my place of worship, I'd be outraged. Similarly, if a churchman became a politician, I'd be pretty disgusted as well.
Oh, Gareth, but since the dawn of time,
I know.
Religion has been a political tool.
Well, the first and second estate.
The dawn of time, religion has been a political tool.
Precisely. And it's never ended well.
And
it's always ended in the third estate being crushed.
I don't know if it's never ended well.
It's
Gareth,
never
in
gone
South Africa,
well.
In South Africa, where for a very long time, we couldn't even, you know, congregate, where three black people together could be seen as a conspiracy by the state. The church was the only place where you could organize and have conversations about kind of how wrong the apartheid government was. It was only in church because the apartheid government believed that
because
the
they
church
were religious, but
was a very
and look,
but and
look
so you can
they,
use
and,
it
but
for
but
good.
This is the, you can also use it for evil. They used to justify a lot of their shitty policies by claiming that they were religious, that they came out of the Bible. Remember?
Well,
very dangerous territory. This I don't like it at all. I do not. I'm very suspicious of people in religion and politics, and I always will be. God forgive me.
You're just suspicious of people, Baba.
I reserve an extra amount of cynicism for the politicians and for the priests. I really do. And one of the rare exceptions is Archbishop Thabo Makgopa, because he came in here in 2017. We spoke to him about his book, Faith and Courage, and we decided to try and get him back here after some of his comments that have garnered lots of views and lots of interest and lots of commentary. He recently, at an Easter vigil this Saturday, said that South Africans need to be wary of political parties who want to use them to fight battles. So he's on my side here, Pumi. He says, the changing individual leaders is no cure for all that is wrong with governance in South Africa today. And he is the Anglican Archbishop of Cape Town, for those people who don't know. He also chairs the Electoral Code of Conduct Observer Mission. He's declared that the Electoral Code of Conduct Observer Mission will not stray away from meeting and addressing issues with individual leaders. At the Easter Vigil, he expressed his concern with the tone of campaigning. He said that after the election, political parties still have to work together to address the country's challenges. I mean, we all accept that, right?
Oh, absolutely.
He said South Africans should not become cynical and demoralized as a result of negative campaigning. If any political leader, he said, wants you to be involved in demeaning the other, please don't do that. So whose campaign has been demeaning? Who do you think he's talking about here?
Wow. Let me see.
I think there's really...
There may be a blue party involved.
There may be.
There may be a red party involved.
Maybe.
There may be a white party involved. I think...
Who's the white party?
Not white as in
blue's
people.
DA. No, I'm thinking like who's the color?
It's one of the ones near the top. I was actually trying to Google now.
Claudi Botswaneng's one.
Not Claudi's one. Claudi's one is just a joke.
Is it?
Absolutely. He's always high. Every time I see him, the guy is high. I'm just like,
I thought Claudi was very credible. All right.
I was just trying to Google now to see how many of the political parties on the ballot actually have a Christian slant. And there's quite a few.
ACDP, yeah.
There
absolutely.
Is
that's
quite
the most famous
few.
One. All right, so listen to this. Archbishop Makgopa said about Cyril Ramaphosa, he too can be replaced. The events of the past 15 months have shown us that we cannot rely solely on changes in the presidency to turn our country around. Well, that's true. Because even though we changed presidents, not a huge amount has changed. He said the country faced a new struggle with values and institutions rather than personalities. And he said we need to build strong systems which cannot be undermined by one party or person's whim. If we want to ensure that government works to improve the lives of all of our people, especially those of the poorest of the poor, we have to strengthen our institutions. Apparently, you actually looked up his homily.
I did. I looked it up and there was a piece of it on YouTube, which was all, it was very poetic and with lots of symbolism, candlelight into the light.
Well, Archbishop, it's a pleasure to speak to you again. He's on the line, Archbishop Thabo Makgopa. How are you, sir?
I'm well, Gareth, and how are you?
Very, very well. We were all very struck by your sermon over the weekend. I know Easter is a big time in churches across South Africa and the world, and I also know that Easter is a great time for us to take a moment to reflect on all the important things going around us, to put them into context. And in the case of an election year, for some wise words from the pulpit, where a lot of politicians seem to be running from pulpit to pulpit, taking advantage of whatever religious institution they can to spread their electioneering message, you instead said we should be just a little bit wary of these guys.
Yes, Gareth, I was just saying it's very critical for us not to forget the fundamentals. And the fundamentals are, let's look at the content of what they are saying, and let's look at where we've come from. Have some of the promises been empty? Have they been fulfilled? Equality of opportunity? Do we have access to, basic things? Have people really kept their promises? And what about some people who are on the party list? Are they the people that will really serve the values that characterize us, or we are longing for as South Africans, or we are just hearing the message and voting en bloc without applying our mind? So I think that was the greater call. And Easter it's beautiful in a sense that Easter reminds us that you can bury the truth in a grave, but it won't stay there. The stone will be opened.
Archbishop Pumi Mashiko is with me. She read your homily over the weekend too, and she said it was very moving. You used a lot of beautiful language about candles and light
symbolism.
You know, and
thank you, Pumi.
I know that you also have a role which is more secular on the Electoral Code of Conduct Observer Commission. What does the Electoral Code of Conduct Observer Commission do, and what would you like it to do, and what would you like us to know about it?
It is formed really on the basis of the code of conduct that all the politicians sign before the elections, committing themselves that in terms of their electioneering, they'll respect each other, they'll respect each other's posters, they'll respect the rules governing the election. So the commission really seeks to hold all the political parties to that code of conduct that they've signed. We want to say you can't sign something and not apply it and be incongruent in practice. Some of the things that we've done in the past is when the rhetoric of politicians has been demeaning to each other with the possibility of creating what we call hotspots or violence in a particular ward, we would call those politicians around the table here at Bishop's Court and say, hey, remember the code of conduct says you will behave in this particular way, respect the other. In certain instances, the IEC officials were said to have been biased or something like that. So we'll call those IEC officials and say, hey, this is the perception or this has been said about your staff. And then we will iron out some of those things. So the main tool that we have as the ECOC is we bring moral pressure to bear on the political processes before the election. And during the elections, we go about observing some of the polling stations as commissioners.
So, Archbishop, you also have criticized Parliament from time to time, saying that barring some exceptions, they have failed abysmally in their oversight obligations towards the executive. Do you ever get blowback from people? St. George's Cathedral is right next to Parliament. Do they ever pop in there and say, excuse me, Archbishop, we'd like to just tell you to stick to religion and we'll stick to politics?
Well, I do get that from time to time. Got it. Archbishop, this part of your sermon, we can't see it in the Bible.
Wow.
Where does it come from? But I always say, when you do your sermon, you read a particular biblical context. You know, Gareth, you haven't come back. You're an Anglican. I'm still working at that. But you read a particular passage. You look at the context. You say, what is the application of that particular passage today? I mean, for example, I was drawing very much on the Ezekiel God who says, I will take your heart of stones and give you a heart of flesh. You will be my people and I will be your God. And said, now, how can South Africa be like that? And the constitution of South Africa also speak like Ezekiel. And when you look at those three women that were at the grave, who saw Christ's grave open. So you can't, the Bible putting the women right at the center still abuse women and girl children. So those are some of the things that I draw in terms of today and I link it to the Bible. But a lot of people will just write the usual line on Twitter or Facebook, hey, Archbishop, your sense is white monopoly capital, and stick to those. But because it's not about the Archbishop, really, it's about the message, it's about really trying to inculcate biblical values and really values in our context. I accept the criticism, but I hope they are hearing the message.
Your Grace, my biggest concern, you know, is the church seems to, and we know how in South Africa the church has always played a very central role in terms of, I was saying to Gareth a little bit earlier, in terms of our, struggle days and pre the new South Africa, there was a very central role that the church played because it gave us an opportunity to gather and have these hard conversations with each other, but also to lift the spirits of the people. But now where we're sitting in a South Africa where the politics are one thing and they're very robust. But what we're also seeing is we are seeing a church body that's disintegrating into a particular, for want of a better word, being run by all sorts of charlatans and promising all sorts of things that, that people can't actually believe in, and that sense of faith that the people have is being compromised in that sense. Is there still a big role for the church to play in politics, or should the church be concentrating on making sure that the church body is not playing with people's faith?
I think that's a very good point, and we regret that particular position. When I say we, I'm also speaking as part of the South African Council of Churches or the National Church Leaders Consultation, and we've just met to reflect on that and to reflect on the Commission for Religious and Cultural Rights that wants to legislate the church, and we're saying we're going to push back because legislating the church against the backdrop of those charlatans is not addressing the point. But the church still has a role to play in society. We are an institution which belongs to God, but we are run by ordinary, fallible human beings like myself, yourself, and the others who are trying to do something bigger than ourselves. And I'm not condoning the charlatans and those that make others to eat all sorts of things, but the ultimate vision of the church is to be the body that does not live to itself, that is not self-sufficient, but that points others that you can really do better here. You can exist for others. You can serve. You can point to all that is just, all that is good, and all that is noble. We get it hopelessly wrong from time to time, but that is a vision. And the church has a role in politics, because politics is nothing else but the ordering of how the citizens ought to live within the city. And the church is part and parcel of that. If the church says we're going to relegate ourselves to a particular corner, the church will have failed in its mission, because I believe that God is God of all, or no God at all. And so the church is called to be in every aspect of society. Let me make an example. We partnered with the Department of Health. We were Minister Motsoaledi. We were doing the TB awareness campaign. We got people to be tested in our churches. And in the past, we did pre-testing for people to know their HIV status. We fought with the stigma. We are still running some of the best schools in South Africa. Well, some of them are very expensive. We started one, which is not expensive, in Sophiatown, the Vuleka schools. So there are some of those, what we call non-prophetic processes that we do to make society cohere. But it's only when the church speak out to say, hey, wait a minute, we're providing social work, we're providing education, we're providing access, and there are corrupt officials, then they say the church is involved in politics.
Archbishop, I'd also like to ask you, the elections around the corner. Do you feel that it is appropriate for politicians to use the church, as I mentioned in the opening to this discussion, as a podium for them to electioneer? And would you allow that, for example, in your own church? Would you allow addresses from the leaders of the various political parties? Do you think that that's something that that should be encouraged, or is something we should be avoiding?
But Gareth, I think it's a bit problematic in a sense that Who do you allow or who don't you allow? For example, if I allow Party X to come and campaign at the cathedral in Cape Town, I should allow all of them. If I don't allow the other, I need to be clear why I don't allow the other. So maybe the best thing is I've tried to work with the state, I've tried to work with the government, I've tried to work with everybody, but not to be partisan, because once you are partisan as a church, now you are dividing society. I remember when I was Bishop of Grahamstown, there were a group of people from the same political party, and they were fighting, and they both came to the church, and they said, please mediate within our political party. We were able to walk with them to resolve the partisan issues. But I would really discourage favoring one political party as opposed to the other. If the church were to say, okay, fine, like some of you guys do in the media, we have all these party political people sit down here, debate and talk to our congregants about your manifestos and let them ask questions, then that is better. You've provided space and you've invited everyone. So the church must avoid polarizing God's people. That's really my message.
Your Grace, I have one more question around just kind of the role of Christianity in in politics. You know, around the world, there's been much talk of the decline of Christianity. I mean, churches are seeing less and less people coming to church, and it's growing in Africa. But what we're also seeing is we're seeing a huge rise in this ultra-right wing kind of organizations. And they use Christianity. They use the Bible very much like the way that the apartheid government used the Bible to justify their views and their biases. How does the church in South Africa, and we were talking about the number of faith-based organizations that are sitting on the ballot, how do you strike that balance, you know, as the Council of Churches, but also as the Electoral Code of Conduct kind of observer in your role in that space, kind of mitigate that and balance those two things out?
It is very difficult to balance, but the good thing is, as the National Church Leaders Consultation, we meet in between throughout the months and years. We not only just a Council of National Church Leaders Consultation, but we also have the interfaith component there. We meet with the Jews, the Muslims, the Baha'i, and everyone on certain projects. Like, for example, there is one where we've been discussing with the mining executive and mining trade unions about how mining can be a source of good within the communities where they work. And we will raise issues like it is important that water should not be contaminated, how they should treat each other. And we've had these courageous conversations as the voice of faith. So we're fortunate in South Africa that we've had that common struggle against apartheid as a faith group. Well, yes, there are a couple of churches that have come here that do not have that history in South Africa that will say, hey, but Archbishop, just preach the word. But again, if you analyze when they say preach the word, it's like they take the word and put it in a particular culture or certain minorities, like you're saying, where they say God has ordained that a particular race, a particular gender, a particular social standing is more blessed than a particular one. I think that is a poor reading of the Bible. It's not really understanding the nuances of the message. We still have those challenges, but we challenge each other. We speak up, and we remind ourselves, and it's very difficult. I know Archbishop Desmond Tutu always says, God is not a Christian. God is God of all. He's God of Muslims, God of Jews, God of those that are struggling to understand God. And so those are some of the things that we wrestle with. But we're not yet there, and we regret that in places like America, like you're saying, people have taken little Jesus and have made him into this beautiful doll that is so pure, and they've forgotten that he was born in the streets of Palestine, and he came as a young Palestinian riding a donkey, not in huge armored vehicles and in palaces.
Archbishop, thank you so much for making some time for us this morning. I hope we'll have you in the studio again sometime soon. Your book is still around. I've seen it in shops, Faith and Courage. People need to see that if they haven't seen it already. And good luck with your work in the Electoral Code of Conduct Observer Commission. Thank you very much for talking to
thank
us.
Thank you, Gareth. Thank you so much. Thank you so much, man. Bye-bye.
Thank you. That's the Archbishop of Cape Town, the Anglican Archbishop of Cape Town, Archbishop Thabo Makgoba. All right. It is 7:30, cliffcentral.com.
This is cliffcentral.com.